This is Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. Thanks for joining me again. I'm Kara Lawrence. The Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra will take the stage in Chenery Auditorium this Sunday at 4 o'clock with two special guest artists. One is Hae-Soo Lee, the bronze medalist of the Stolberg International String Competition, and the other is the winner of the KJSO's internal concerto competition, violinist Leah Jin. In addition to the two concerto performances, there are works by Samuel Barber, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and Benjamin Britten. Here's the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra conductor, Andrew Kohler.
In a way, I was thinking about this program, and I've titled it Precocity. It's all about, you know, precocious young talent. And I thought, well, this is really makes sense. It's such a good fit for the Junior Symphony because it's a natural amplification of what it is we do all the time. I mean, the youth orchestra is in and of itself a celebration of young talent. And really, the immediate catalyst was, you've already mentioned, Hae-Soo Lee, who's the bronze medal winner of the Stolberg competition. And, you know, she was the one piece of the programming puzzle when I sat down to think about this this program that was already in place. I knew that she would be joining us this February. And I thought, okay, so how do I build a program around this? Let me think. And I took a look in her bio, and I saw this one. This is practically the first line in her bio. It says, Hae-Soo Lee began the viola at the age of 8. At the age of 9, she was accepted to Juilliard pre-college. And I thought to myself, with equal parts inspiration and despair, well, that didn't take very long, did it? You know. And then at the age of 14, just a few years later, she's accepted to Curtis. Not pre-college anymore, but actual Curtis. I mean, the Curtis Institute of Music is the most selective collegiate institution in America. Period. That's it, bar none. I mean, it doesn't, it's not hard, there's nothing that's harder to get into. And here she is attending at the age of 14. It's really just extraordinary. And it really makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, how is it that there are some people who after a year can already be working with teachers at Juilliard and just move so far ahead of the pack? And so I started designing a program that obviously featured these two young soloists, both within the orchestra and outside of it, who are extraordinary talents, but also composers themselves who demonstrated this really incredible, precocious maturity at a very early age. I think it's something that wows audiences all the time when we see somebody who's not yet fully grown and yet somehow is able to speak in a musical voice that has the emotional maturity and technical virtuosity that you would come to expect only in someone years older than that.
And you assume that you could never, ever do yourself, yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's as I say, you know, equal parts inspiration, despair. You think, what am I doing with my life? How does it take this person a year to do that and me so much longer? But on the other hand, it's also just extraordinarily inspiring. And that's the part I choose to focus on when designing this program, mm-hmm. and certainly the way I feel every time that I attend the Stolberg competition each spring when we all in Kalamazoo get the opportunity to hear these 12 wonderful semifinalists who come and just dazzle us for a day straight, you know, just all these players under 20 who really play as if they've known the instrument forever.
Well, the composers you chose are also famous for their precocity. There's Mozart, of course.
Yes.
Felix Mendelssohn is
which was a lovely gift
crowd.
From Leah. She just happened to win the concerto competition with Mendelssohn. I thought, ah, ideal. That's the second year in a row someone has won with a piece that just happens to fit beautifully into the program.
We have Benjamin Britten as well and
yes.
Samuel Barber. I would say it's very, very common for classical announcers like myself, presenters, to call some of their early works, oh, this is very fresh sounding. Or maybe it's... Is it a function of just knowing that they were young when they wrote it, or do they actually sound kind of fresh?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think we have a tendency, I think anytime we hear new music, right, we just as human beings want to categorize it in some way, right? I often, when I'm hearing a new composer, fall into the trap, and I've tried hard to keep this to myself, but I often think, here I am listening to a new piece, and I think, oh, I hear a little Prokofiev in there, I hear a little something in there. You know, it's the way humans explore the world, right? We're trying to make sense of the unknown reaches of the world. But at the same time, there's always truth to that. Nothing exists in a vacuum, and there's always influences writing there. But I do think some of these young composers, yes, there's a natural vitality to their talent, and that sometimes really shines through in these early works. You know, it's interesting. Samuel Barber, not only was he a precocious young talent who declared to his mother at the age of 9 that he was going to be a composer. This is a really charming letter that exists apparently where he wrote in his childlike script still, "Mother, I just want you to know I plan to be a composer. Don't tell me to, you know, forget this unpleasant business and go outside and play football. I won't hear of it. I'm going to be a composer. Don't try and dissuade me." And sure enough, right, he was. And I found a really interesting coincidence in that he also began at the Curtis Institute of Music, the same place that Heisu attends, and at the same age. He was also accepted at 14. That's exactly when he started at the Curtis Institute, which at that time was pretty much a brand new school, but was already staffed with, you know, some of the greatest musicians teaching there that the early 20th century had known. And in fact, this piece that we're going to perform by him, the Overture to the School for Scandal, was his graduation piece. He spent a good long time there, so he was already over the hill at the age of 21 by the time he wrote this. But it is an incredible piece, and I think it's a great example of the freshness that you just alluded to a second ago. I mean, this is such an incredibly energetic overture. And at the same time, there's a beautiful theme in the middle of it, a much more calm and romantic sort of theme, unabashedly romantic. And that's really one of the hallmarks of Barber's style, mature style as well. It would stay with him throughout his entire life. So you can hear both that freshness and vitality, but already the mature composer speaking in this overture.
Why would a composer write an overture to a stage play, The School for Scandal? It was originally a play, correct?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's not a musical. It's not an opera.
Exactly right. It's a farce from it's a comedy of manners from the late 18th century. And I can only guess that Barber, you know, given this precocity, was probably extremely well-read and just had some really unusual tastes. I mean, for, you know, a teenager, was just attracted. It is a very funny play. I confess I have not read the whole thing myself, but, you know, there are characters that the main character is named Lady Sneerwell, and it's all about these sort of rich, well-to-do British aristocrats who are scheming and plotting to ruin one another's reputation, obviously in a culture where reputation reigned supreme. That was everything you had. And Barber certainly doesn't aim to capture the plot in any kind of programmatic way. It's not sort of a progression where you think, oh, this theme represents this idea or this character, but rather just the atmosphere of the play at large. So right from the start of the overture, you hear this rather grating bitonal snap. It's a little bit dissonant at the beginning, and then there's this sharp trill on it. It almost sounds like somebody thumbing their nose at you, you know, just sort of setting out the joke. And then immediately the violins start in on this very sneaky sounding theme. You really feel like something is afoot. But as I say, that progresses. There's a lot of very difficult, very quicksilver kind of transitions. And then right in the middle of it, this beautiful theme that really seems, says to me, this is quintessential Barber.
We heard music of Samuel Barber, his Overture to the School for Scandal, and my guest is Andrew Kohler, the conductor of the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra in concert this Sunday at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium, and they're starting with this overture, which was written by Barber at what age, did you say?
He was just 21. It was his graduation piece from Curtis, but it was soon taken up by the Philadelphia. Actually, interestingly, Fritz Reiner was the conductor of the Curtis Orchestra at the time, who was later legendarily the music director of the Chicago Symphony. And he refused to do the piece. Unclear why. Maybe just didn't like it. Maybe thought it was too hard, something. But he refused to do it. But so the Philadelphia Orchestra instead, just down the street in Philadelphia, said, all right, we'll take it up. And they did it at a summer concert. And soon after that, it became a staple of the repertory.
Yes, it's still commonly played today.
Absolutely.
On orchestral concerts. And it begins the concert on Sunday, which is called Precocity. And it does feature and celebrate a number of young composers and performers, one of which is Hae-soo Lee, who was a competitor in the Stolberg International String Competition last May.
Right.
And she earned the bronze medal. What I have here, Andrew, is my pre-interview with Hae. I talked to all 12 finalists from wherever they were, and I just asked them all the same questions, including one about why it's important to participate in a junior symphony, or what it was like for them, and did it help their musical development? So if we could take a moment to get to know Hae-soo Lee here, we'll come back and discuss the music she's performing.
Perfect.
My name is Hae-soo Lee. I'm 15 years old. I'm currently studying at Curtis Institute of Music. My major is the viola. I'm from South Korea, Seoul, and currently, I'm living with my mom in Philadelphia.
Where are you right now? Are you at school?
Actually, I'm at home right now. I just came from school.
What was it like to, you know, grow up in Seoul and speak a different language and have a different culture and then come all the way to the United States?
Actually, it was okay because when I was young, I lived in the States. I lived in Seattle for a year, which helped my English to improve. And I lived in New Jersey and in New York for 2 years afterwards. So it was kind of like normal for me to travel back and forth. So it wasn't like a big change for me.
Would you tell me about your teacher at the Curtis Institute, Roberto Diaz?
Well, first of all, like, when I go meet him, like, I learn a lot, that's for sure. And I feel really great after I see him all the time. He's very nice and he's very friendly.
That works for you?
Yeah. Definitely. I don't like scary teachers.
So what's the concerto you and Mr. Diaz have worked on for the Stolberg?
I will be playing the Walton Viola Concerto, first and second movement.
What do you like about Sir William Walton's Viola Concerto?
First of all, it's very emotional and it's hard to say.
You feel swept up in it when you play it?
Definitely.
Is this a concerto that you have prepared for a long time, or will this be kind of a new performance for you?
Actually, I've played this a few times, and recently I played with the Philadelphia Orchestra, the second movement.
That's impressive, to play with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
It was a great experience.
I'm asking finalists about their experiences in youth orchestras because Julia Stolberg conducted the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony for many, many years. Have you been in youth orchestras, and what was it like?
Unfortunately not, but I've been in orchestras at festivals and here at Curtis. Well, actually, I was in the Juilliard Pre-College String Orchestra, but not a lot of experience in youth orchestras.
Is that something you want to do, or are you thinking of just being a soloist is the most fun thing right now?
Well, I do enjoy orchestral performances because I love playing with my colleagues, and it's just like a lot of fun, and I do learn a lot of musicals. stuff, but I think I do like being a soloist, but it's hard to say right now because I love both.
Well, hey, Sue, I wish you all the best of luck in coming to Kalamazoo.
Thank you.
That was Heisu Lee in conversation before she appeared at the Stolberg International String Competition, and she went on to win the bronze medal. And now she will appear this Sunday with my guest Andrew Kohler and the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra playing the Walton Concerto.
Exactly right. Yeah, we're very excited to have her. And you know, it's a tough road for violists in the solo repertoire realm. There's not an awful lot written for the viola. It's often the forgotten cousin. Between, you know, lots of cello concertos and lots of violin concertos. But I think one of the reasons why the Walton has such enduring appeal is because it is just so well written for the viola. I mean, it really takes into account the viola's naturally dark timbre, that burnished quality of its sound, and really puts it to excellent use.
Was William Walton also a precocious young composer?
Unfortunately, this is the one that kind of breaks the mold. This one is really for Heisu, and this was, you know, the work that Heisu won her bronze medal on, so we decided to do it. But to the best of my knowledge, Walton wasn't particularly precocious. He did show some talent at an early age, but didn't really come into his own as a composer until, you know, just like a regular person at in his 20s sometime.
He is one I feel gets overlooked when we're looking at like Benjamin Britten and Ray Fun Williams and Edward Elgar, and like, hey, Walton is there too.
Absolutely,
writing some incredible pieces.
I think you're absolutely right about that, and I've been as guilty of overlooking him as well. But you know, I've really come to admire this concerto. There are you know, I flippantly made a joke about hearing influences of other composers earlier, and here I go again. But really, there is some influence of Prokofiev in here, and an interesting one. It's the first violin concerto in particular. There's something about the structure of this work, as well as its mixture of sort of early 20th century modernism, that bracing quality of modernism, but very much tempered by lyricism that defines the work. And I think we'll hear that in the listen of the first movement. All these qualities, in fact, both the intense lyricism, it's a beautiful first theme, and also not simply just a beautiful first theme, but one that has a kind of heaviness and darkness to it that I think, again, particularly suits the personality of the viola. There's a particularly beautiful gesture where he sort of mixes the major and the minor mode, and you hear that's one of the distinctive motives that recurs throughout the entire work. And it's almost as if the music embraces dark and light all at once.
We've heard music from the Viola Concerto of William Walton, which Stolberg bronze medalist Heisu Lee will perform on Sunday with the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra. My guest is Andrew Kohler, the director of the KJSO and the Kalamazoo Philharmonia. Perhaps you could also talk now about Lia Jin, the winner of the concerto competition of the KJSO.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lia is also no stranger to precocious talent herself. And, you know, I think if my memory serves, she entered the orchestra still while she was in seventh grade. And she's been co-concertmaster for at least a year now, which means that she was already concertmaster or co-concertmaster of the orchestra in her freshman year of high school because she's just a sophomore now. I have to say, Lia is a unusually gifted person, but in very specific ways. I really have to say that I rely on her so much in the orchestra. She's a really consistent presence. She knows her music, very steady sort of player. But she's also, as those who are able to join us this Sunday will discover, a really beautiful violinist. That is to say, I mean, she really seems to have no... There's an effortlessness about her playing that I think is very, very striking, you know? It seems like there's just no difficulty for her to play beautifully in tune all the time. And in this sense, I think that Mendelssohn fits her well, because Mendelssohn as a composer, I think, always captured a kind of classical grace about him, even though he was firmly a romantic composer. And there's that sort of elfin elegance about Mendelssohn's music, and I think it's something that suits Leah's effortless style very well. Mendelssohn, I think, maybe is the most striking prodigy, true prodigy. You know, we're talking about precocious talents here on this program, but I think I can go so far as to use the P word with Mendelssohn and say that he's an honest to goodness prodigy,
even ahead of Mozart.
I will go so far as to say ahead of Mozart, because the thing is, with Mozart, as amazing as he was, and we also are playing Mozart, we're playing his Marriage of Figaro overture, but with Mozart, you still hear that even despite how well-crafted those youthful works are and how impressive they are as achievements, then Mozart continues to mature and expand throughout his life and through his 20s into his 30s before his untimely death. You really feel... like this is a composer who's the maturity of the works at in the late 20s are really well beyond what he was doing when he was young. On the other hand, with Mendelssohn, the Violin Concerto happens to be a late work, but one would be hard-pressed to say that it's really superior to something like the Octet or the Midsummer Night's Dream Overture, and those were written when he was still 17 years old. So the fact that he still as a teenager could write things that were not just truly excellent, but really masterpieces, I mean, honest masterpieces, I think is something that is really astonishing and rarely repeated in musical history.
I don't know Leah Jin as well as you do, but I've had the chance to meet her and even hear her play here at WMUK. She and her friend Maisie Snyder, mm-hmm. viola, were a duo concerto entrant one year for KJSO. I got to hear that and thought it was awfully special, so brought them in and had them talk about their music. Leah said she was a student first of Dana Duncan and the Suzuki Academy at Winchell Church, and then she now studies with the professor of violin at Western Michigan University, Renata Knifick, since she was about 9 years old. So she's had that wonderful opportunity and advantage to really focus on her music. Later in the interview said she might not choose a musical career. It's just something she loves to do.
Yeah, she just confirmed that again. We were talking not too long ago and said again that she doesn't see herself. She put it in very stark terms. She said, oh, I don't know that I could compete in that kind of a circumstance. And I countered with, I'm sure you could compete if that's what you wanted. I mean, I really do think she's a particularly gifted young player. But, you know, as my hope for her, as it is for any junior symphony student, is just that whatever her choice, the music will always play a role in her life and will be something that enriches it. And so long as that's the case, then I'm happy with however she wants to pursue that passion.
Well, here's part of my conversation with Leah Jin when she was here about a year ago.
There's always some delight in playing music and in playing concertos and even Bach that you really enjoy, and there's really a lot of delight in making music, but sometimes it's really, really difficult to try to get yourself to practice every day and consistently improve. And even though I know I want to be a better musician, but practicing every day is tedious and sometimes it can be boring, but...
Don't sugarcoat it, Leah.
My violin teacher, Renata Knifick, she always tells me to visualize something that will calm me down right before I perform so I can really focus and concentrate on the present and playing the music in the moment and being in the music and being one with the music.
And that's the mindset we hope that she'll be achieving on Sunday when she performs with the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra. I'm glad she has this chance. I'm sure she's graduating soon.
Actually, she's just a sophomore.
Sophomore?
That's what I mean. Precocious talent, right?
It's ridiculous. Well, what a great opportunity. So Leah will be continuing to play in the KJSO for the next couple seasons, we hope. And yeah, this is a really great moment to mark, though, on Sunday at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. And she's playing the first movement of the Mendelssohn?
Or? It's actually the finale, the last
movement. The finale movement. Well, I think I can actually make that happen here
at
WMUK. Let's listen to a little of the Mendelssohn. We just heard the finale to the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto in a very old recording now with Zeno Francescatti. You can hear a fresh performance from a young performer, a sophomore, named Leah Jin, who is the winner of this year's Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra Concerto Competition. Mm-hmm. My guest, Andrew Kohler, will be conducting this program called Precocity, starting at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. We've talked about the program so far, but maybe we could do a little recap for listeners who tuned in a little late to tell us what's already happening on the program.
Absolutely. Well, we begin with Barber, also precocious talent in his own right, entering Curtis at just 14 and composing one of his first works, the Overture to the School for Scandals, a graduation piece from Curtis. And that overture opens our program. Then we welcome Stolberg Bronze medalist Heisu Lee, who will perform the Walton Viola Concerto in its entirety. A great and epic and brooding concerto, but one with plenty of opportunities for the virtuosic thrill that we expect in a concerto. We'll take our intermission then. When we come back from intermission, we actually start with something that I think will be well known to your listeners. We haven't discussed exactly, but Mozart's Marriage of Figaro overture, which is, if you want a 4-minute primer on just how much joy can be sort of bottled up and encapsulated in a little bit of music, that's the one. I mean, that overture is just absolutely, it's like capturing lightning in a bottle, you know, and it is just so much, such a thrill, and there's just so much sheer joy.
You know what I think of when I think of the Marriage of Figaro overture?
What's that?
Strings and bassoon. The bassoonist.
Absolutely. Right, the bassoonists have to play that very difficult opening. Like, yeah, exactly right. Those poor bassoonists. I love, you know, it's got that murmuring beginning and then it just explodes with vitality. And no one can really capture sheer joy quite the way that Mozart can. Then what we've just listened to, the Mendelssohn finale with our own internal concerto competition winner, Leah Jin. And then finally to cap off our concert, Benjamin Britten, Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra. This is a great work because here we are talking already about precocious young people who are showing such immense talent at an early age. Britten was one such composer. He wrote little scraps of pieces that he actually turned into his first published opus. The Simple Symphony that a lot of people still play today is actually a collection of juvenilia that was slightly reworked, but those were all themes that he had partially written as a very young boy. So he is himself precocious. He is trying to inspire, I think, the next generation of musical talent in this work, which is largely educational in its scope. There's two versions. There's one with narration and then one without. We will perform without narration, but still the structure of the piece is very clear. It's all about an introduction to the orchestra, that is to say, the instruments in the orchestra. And what it does is present a theme and then a series of variations on that theme. And in the series of variations, Britten deconstructs the orchestra, and we get a chance to hear each instrumental group within the orchestra play something that's very characteristic of their instrument. And then the other really nice thing, there's still one more layer here, which is that it's a estimable act of homage to an older British composer, Henry Purcell, a Baroque British composer, who was, get ready for it, also quite a prodigy. Apparently his first published work dates from the age of 11 or something like that. So he was himself a prodigy. Here was Britten years later, centuries later, also a prodigy, sort of honoring him by using his theme as the impetus for his new work, and doing it in the service of an educational piece written for the BBC, actually, to be broadcast, which helped explain the orchestra and helped get young people to listen to the orchestra and understand it a little bit better.
Okay, so if you want to get into Purcell these days, you can go to the big celebratory odes with lots mm-hmm. of vocals and as much orchestra as you could muster at the time, cantatas and things like that. But then we also have this great collection of chamber music for like viola consort or viol consorts mm-hmm. and things like that. And then there's this wonderful, colorful section of theater music that we have from Purcell. And I think that's where this theme comes from.
I think you're right, yes.
Like some play like Abdelazar or something mm-hmm. like that, where it's just simply used as part of the action, in, you know, to a play. And then, but Britten must have, you know, explored quite a lot of Purcell manuscripts to find this fun tune out of a
yeah.
theater piece.
And it's a very noble sounding tune. It's got a great, very majestic quality to it. So it's wonderful to hear it right at the outset of Britten's work, because you hear it now sort of fully outfitted in the guise of the modern symphony orchestra. You hear percussion playing, you hear the full brass, the full wind complement, an orchestra that, of course, Purcell would not have known in that exact configuration and that size. So it gives it even more strength.
Well, let's give it a listen and remind folks again, the concert of the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra is at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium this Sunday. Okay, that's the theme. Benjamin Britten created the sound of that theme, but the theme itself written by Henry Purcell from the 1600s or so.
Yeah, late 1600s, exactly right. And that's kind of a shorthand to the whole piece, what we just heard. So basically, you can hear the construction, deconstruction. We hear the full orchestra play it, and then we hear it in the large choirs of the orchestra. So first we hear the woodwinds take that same theme, then we hear the brass take it over, then we hear the strings take it over, then the percussion does a version, and then finally we put them all back together again.
It's really nice that he did not leave the percussion out.
That's right. They're not always it's not as easy to put melody in percussion parts, but he found ways to do it while using timpani. So what comes next would be a series of variations where he breaks down those families even farther. So we would hear the flutes do a variation, then the oboes do a variation, each one very characteristic of the instruments, and they're all brilliantly rendered, and they just take one little motive, one little hint of what's in a Purcell theme. And then the real tour de force is what concludes the work, and I think that's what we'll listen to in just a second, and that's a great fugue where everyone joins in on the same tune. Once again, it's a sort of variant taken from the Purcell tune, And he just adds each voice after the next so that he goes from just a piccolo playing by herself until the flutes join, and then the oboes, and then the clarinets, and then each one that we've all heard in that series of variations adds in until everybody's playing at the same time. And then, once everyone is playing at the same time, this incredible fugue theme of Britten's, half the orchestra continues the fugue theme, and the other half starts playing Purcell's original tune from the very beginning. It's an absolute tour de force, and it is such a thrilling ending to this work. And I can only think that it surely has done its work in inspiring future generations of precocious young talents.
Tour de force. So is there any question as to whether actually this belongs more for a grown-up orchestra to be performed? Is it hard to play? It sounds really challenging.
Very hard to play. And it was absolutely intended for a professional orchestra to play, but maybe the listeners are the ones who it was intended for a younger crowd. But like any good, you know, Pixar film these days, right? Britten figured out a way to make it sophisticated enough for any adult to enjoy, but also approachable enough for someone new to the orchestra to come and love it as well.
So this is a challenge you've placed in the hands of your...
Oh, absolutely. Everything's a challenge.
Well, I think they'll probably enjoy giving it a good run on Sunday at 4 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. The whole program is filled with sort of a brilliance and a freshness. I'm just going to use the word again. There's some wonderfully combining things that bring the whole program together, as you're so very good at doing, you know.
Well, thank you.
Thinking of a program as not just a collection of disparate things, but as something with a whole theme and overarching connection to
thank
it. Because the more you look at music, certainly, the more you realize this is like this is like this is like this.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this program. Again, the concert is at 4 o'clock on Sunday. Full details at kjso.org. And you can find out tickets about tickets and much more there. Anything we can look forward to in the future from KJSO? Is this the final concert of the season, or still looking forward to another
one?
No,
we are climbing ever farther still, and I'll be back with you in a few months to talk about what will be our final concert this year, which, believe it or not, will be Mahler 2. We will be undertaking the Great Resurrection Symphony. That'll be a huge challenge for us as well.
Incredible. Well, thank you, Andrew.